In His Way of the Warrior, episode 271 will take place a lot in a teleconference sort of way as Obi-Wan Kenobi is on the road. Ken is betting all the money that we won last weekend in the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, and we will get to talk to the folks from MMA Dude Bro, another podcast you should check out in the MMA sphere. So episode 271, In His Way of the Warrior, it starts now.
Yeah. Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
Rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Obi-Wan Kenobi. He is on the road. We have found him. I want to first thank him because I'm assuming that what he was doing in Lansing last week was instrumental in getting Proposition 1 not passed. So thank you for whatever black ops you were running last week. So we appreciate that. And welcome back to the show. I think we say this every week, Joe, that it always seems like we're going to come into a week and we're going to be like, oh, what are we going to talk about? Because it's Stipe Miocic and Mark Hunt. What are we? And then the UFC or Mayweather fill the void for us.
Yeah, and you know, maybe we should just start doing this. Every week we'll say, dude, next week's going to be a bit of a struggle. And then John Jones will, you know, run over a pregnant woman, and Manny Pacquiao will throw 400 punches.
Yeah, so we talked last week, fight of the century, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, mano a mano, the fight we've been waiting for. It was supposed to happen 5 years ago, and we saw very quickly in round one why it didn't, because Floyd was so much faster than Manny Pacquiao. And, you know, I was saying afterwards that you knew that there was going to be all of the hate about how much the fight, quote unquote, sucked, right? And part of that comes from the fact that Floyd is so good at what he does, but what he does isn't interesting to watch if you were expecting two dudes to stand on the logo and punch each other until they knock one of them out.
Eric, I got to tell you, I got caught up in the hype. I knew that Floyd Mayweather was a defensive, elusive boxer, brilliant at what he does, obviously. But I'm as guilty as anybody else. Got caught up in the hype. I thought this was going to be just this exciting, I'll even say it, slugfest, although we knew it wouldn't happen. I'm all amped up, pumped for the fight. 3 rounds in, I'm checking Twitter, Facebooking, just anything but watching the fight. It was, in my opinion, I can appreciate the brilliance of what Floyd Mayweather can do. But there's a difference between being a technical, brilliant fighter and being an entertaining fighter, right? And I was not entertained that night. And from, you know, general consensus, much of the people who paid $100 to watch it were not either.
So let me ask you two questions, because I don't disagree with you, right? Somebody who is brilliant at boxing may not be the most exciting fighter ever. As a matter of fact, you know, a lot of Floyd's fights tend to go this way, which is why it was really not a surprise to most people on the show and most people listening that that's exactly what happened. Two things. One, your thoughts on this Manny Pacquiao shoulder injury and the two fans that are suing him
just great.
You know, in a class action lawsuit because they spent $100 and he was injured and shouldn't have taken the fight. And two, last week when I was going on and on about how I thought there is no way they're only going to do this once, both Julian and who filled in for you and Ken Evans were like, yeah, I mean, they said they're only going to do it once, so I really think they're only going to do it once. And Monday, that seemed to be the consensus. And then Tuesday, it was, you know, when I said in the ring that my last fight was in September, you know, I'm good. Like, wait until Manny's shoulder's all good. I mean, we could let's totally do that again. We broke the pay-per-view model. I made $1 trillion a second. So I would like to do that again. Let's do that again. So those two questions. What are your thoughts on the shoulder injury? Obviously, in boxing, as far as I know, again, and I'm very casual fan as far as watching it, I don't know that there's been too many bouts of this size canceled due to injury. Do you?
No, very rarely. And so, just to be clear, he tore his rotator cuff, I believe, was the official injury, which is serious. It's going to be like a 9 to 12 month recovery period. So I guess there's a couple ways to look at it, right? In MMA, we say this all the time. Nobody fights injury-free. You're always fighting with, you know, a particular injury. In boxing, man, if you've got a torn rotator cuff, that's a lot more. You can't, you know, take the guy down and just hit him with elbows or go for a submission. You've got less tools in your box, right? So that's a big deal. And apparently what happened was he was able to get injections leading up to the fight approved by the athletic commission. The night of the fight, or the day of the fight, they did not let him get these injections, which I think they were like something to stop the pain. And so he didn't know that was going to happen. He expected that he was going to be able to get these injections. That's one piece. The other piece is he had these people suing him. I think it's hilarious. I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
Well, no, it's obviously
really comical.
It's obviously not going to go anywhere. I mean, it makes for some fodder. But do you think that would have made a difference? Because shoulder or no shoulder, the rest of his body was not moving as fast as Floyd.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, and that's not the Manny that I think any of us expected to see. And I don't recall the stats specifically, but he put out like around 500 punches. And in other fights, he's gone north of 1,000. So if he perhaps had a fully functioning shoulder, would he have had that higher output and then been more successful? I don't know. He was the aggressor. He had a couple good flurries, but I guess, I don't know. And I'll ask you a question, Eric. Do you want to see a rematch?
No, I said this last week. I barely wanted to see this one. So
exactly. And even if he fights in September, who's he going to fight? And who's going to buy that pay-per-view?
Well, the rumor was that he was going to fight Amir Khan in September, and then I guessed that Manny would be in May. But, I mean, if he's just going to skip Amir and wait for Manny, I think that's a thing.
Yeah, well, he's only got one more fight left in his contract. So
right. No. So the way I played it out is that he would take the Amir Khan fight, close out the contract, then renegotiate for this rematch and get $1 billion for the renegotiation,
right.
Was
yeah.
What I thought was going to happen. That appears
hey,
that
more power to him. So I believe, what are the pay-per-view buys estimated at? It was north of $3 million, right?
Yeah, I mean, it broke the pay-per-view model. So what, I mean, what does that mean? Like, they broke the whole thing.
I'm assuming it's north of $3 million. UFC 100 sold 1.4 million pay-per-views, less than half of that, and that's the largest pay-per-view MMA has ever done. You know, if he fights Manny again, I don't think it's going to be the big numbers that we had last time. If he fights Amir Khan, I think it's going to be a fraction of this fight as well. There's this big debate going on online, right? Is this the death of boxing? Was this kind of the pinnacle, the biggest fight of our lives, the most pay-per-views ever sold? A lot of people, a lot of first-time boxing fans and a lot of people who don't watch a lot of boxing tuned in, obviously, or most likely only watched the main event and were highly disappointed. Where do you stand on that, Eric? Do you think
I think
this is the death of boxing?
I think they tried halfway decently to build two stars in the two fights leading up. Now, I don't remember either of their names, so I apologize. But the Russian kid in the very first fight on the main card just...
Exactly. But you don't even know his name.
I don't know his name. So, I mean, they've got some work to do, but I really think the stuff that NBC and NBC Sports is doing with Bob Arum, I think that stuff is interesting. Will it build superstars? I don't know, but do they? I don't know that they need to, because they could. They've done very well on NBC and NBC Sports. So would just the repetition, we'll call it the tough model, would that help it in the interim until they figured out who the next star was? Perhaps. But they certainly have an uphill climb, both in the rematch to get that many people want to buy it again, and in the overall sport of boxing to get that kind of interest.
Yeah, I think I fall in the camp that I wouldn't say boxing is dead, but I think this was the pinnacle. I don't know of any other big names, and there may be some hardcore boxing fans that can tweet us out there that, you know, are going to take Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao's place to sell a fight this big. I think you're going to see a big shift, which we've already seen, you know, over to MMA.
Outside of the rematch between Manny and Floyd Mayweather, which we'll wait and see when that comes about, as I've been saying all week, my guess is May 7th of 2016. But as Joe alluded to, that's going to be a tight turnaround if it is really 9 to 12 months. But we'll wait and see what's happening. The other crazy news this week is literally this afternoon, the email memo leaked from the Reebok deal. So what the UFC fighters are going to get. And, I mean, I'm not trying to be one of the people that jumps on the bandwagon and goes, what in the actual F is this deal about? But what in the actual F is this deal about?
It's great the way it leaked, too. So they sent an email out to their current roster, and one of the guys took a picture of it and then tweeted it. So it would just, like, hit the internet, spread like wildfire.
Well, and what I thought was great
later
about
this afternoon, UFC had to, like, release, give out a press release kind of covering their butts because they're like, oh, everybody knows if you have 0 to 5 fights, you only get $5,000 from Reebok.
No. You only get $2,500 from Reebok. 6 to 10 is $5,000. 11 to 15, 10. 16 to 20. Now, seriously, in your head, I want you to start keeping track. We're at 16 to 20 fights in the UFC, not total. 16 to 20 fights in the UFC, you get $15,000 per bout. 21 and up. So what is that? 5 fighters on the roster right now.
Maybe
10. They get $20,000 a fight. If it's a title fight, the challenger gets $30,000. The champion gets $40,000. And remember, if you're new to MMA, think what you saw last weekend in Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather and understand that they don't want that in the UFC. They don't want everything sponsored differently. They don't want the Burger King guy wandering out. They don't want Takate to be everywhere. You know, they don't want that. They've made that clear. They want everything to look streamlined and concise and, you know, clean lines and all that stuff. So this was a step. Uniforms, Reebok uniforms, huge deal with Reebok. And Cody Gibson is the fighter that tweeted it out. And what I like about what Cody Gibson did is he essentially cut out all the verbiage of the email that they got and just showed you the fights and the dollar amount.
Yeah. So I agree that they needed to come up with some type of, you know, policies and procedures for uniforms. You had some guys coming out in white trunks that weren't approved. There was a huge fee that sponsors had to pay to the UFC. And then we learned, okay, they're going to do this big Reebok deal. Everybody's going to get paid based on where they're ranked. Okay, that makes sense. You know, the performance-based, right? So it's not tenure, but it started off as ranking-based. We didn't know at that point how much they were going to get compensated. Fast forward to today, they're going to get paid by tenure. And so I think we're still relatively okay with that. They should, some of the guys, you know, it's going to be a happy medium. Some of the guys, like the Conor McGregor, who has, you know, less than 10 fights, is making way more money than the no-name guys who have, you know, less than 10 fights and kind of find a happy medium there. Conor's still going to get compensated better. So we're still kind of okay with that. Now these numbers hit, and this is absolutely ridiculous. For the people who don't know, you know, a lot of these fighters start at $6,000 to show, $6,000 to win. So you could start at $6,000 to show, $5,000 in sponsorship. That's $11,000. And I wish John was on the line right now, too, because of that $11,000, you have to pay taxes. You have to pay management fees. You have to pay your agent. You have to pay your gym. You have to pay your training. By the time it's all said and done, you're paying to fight in the UFC. You're not making money. You're paying to fly yourself out to Vegas.
Well, and let's remember, you're not even accounting the fact that if you're on that lower tier, right, the 1 to 5 fights, and bear in mind that I would guess, according to this ranking system, 80% of the women fighter in the UFC fall into this category immediately.
Right. Yeah,
so if you're a female MMA fighter, you immediately fall into this 1 to 5 fight ratio. And so you've got to take care of all of the things that Joe just said. And then on top of that, if you get injured, you fight once a year.
Yep.
So you've blown through the $11,000 to take care of all the stuff to get you to the UFC. Let's say you even win the fight, so you get $16,000. You win the fight, you blow through all of that stuff, and you maybe have $3,000 to survive on for a year when you get to go back and, you know, bag groceries at your local grocery store or whatever you're going to do, teach private jujitsu lessons.
Exactly. You're going to pay for your injuries in medicine. You know, we talk about this a lot. The fighters aren't represented by, you know, a collective union. So the UFC is just moving completely. This is, they're saying they're doing it in the fighters' best interest. The UFC is doing what's best for the UFC. And the fighters have zero input on this. Zero input. So imagine the NFL just pushing down all these policies without the UFC, without the players' union having any input at all. And you bet yourself that these contracts they write are in favor of the UFC. It's the UFC's lawyers creating these deals and contracts, and you're going to sign it because you want to fight in the UFC. I think the root of this problem is the fighters need better representation. They need to unionize. And if it's not a union, a fighters association, however that may look, but they need better representation. And this is kind of a smack in the face.
Sure.
And let me good point that, you know, proves that.
And let me just frame this for you, right? Kat Zingano, who just fought for the title in the UFC against Ronda Rousey, has two fights in the UFC. Miesha Tate, who's a staple in female MMA in the UFC, has had five fights in the UFC. Amanda Nunes, somebody that they're bantying about whether or not she's going to get a title fight at some point. She has had four fights in the UFC. Raquel Pennington, also another name that people like to talk about, three fights in the UFC. Holly Holm, one fight in the UFC. Ashley Evans-Smith, one fight in the UFC. So these are all these people that they want to build these divisions off their backs, but they're going to pay them $2,500 till they get another six fights under their belt, which if you're 100% healthy and your opponent is 100% healthy, that's another 24 to 36 months.
Yeah, it's deplorable. I hope the fighters can come together and get a better deal.
Do you think you'll see? Do you think you'll see? Are you calling for a union? Is that what you think you'll see out of this?
Yeah, you know, they have to have some type of association. And I think this might be the straw that broke the camel's back, right? Another piece of this is there's no transparency, right? The way this was leaked was through some tweet. And now all the fighters are tweeting each other, you know, talking about, oh, we're making big bucks. I should have went into boxing, right?
Right. Well,
on the undercard there who nobody's ever heard of made 1,000 times more than half the people you just listed.
Yes.
Or all the people you just listed.
But let's
some of which were in title fights.
Sure, but let's be fair here, because I'm not one person that wants to do this argument because I think it's totally unfair. If you are able to build a business that garners a half a billion with a B dollars for a single night event, and you want to spread that wealth around to the people below you, that absolutely needs to happen. Make no mistake about it. The UFC will never have a single event that gives you a one or a half of a billion dollar payday. Never, ever going to happen. So
never is a strong word.
Never going to happen. I'm going to tell you,
is a strong
never,
word.
Ever going to happen. Have you ever, we've been doing this for 25 years, Joe. Have you ever in 25 years heard as much noise about a fight in the UFC as you had about Pacquiao and Mayweather?
You've never heard of any combat sport making.
You've never heard of any sport that was buzzed
right
about as much as that fight was. So I say kudos to them for building that, and you can dump on it if you want to and say that the people whose name you don't even know made that money, but they built that model. The UFC didn't build that model, and I'm telling you right now, it's not going to happen. And when you look at a deal like this, it's obvious it's not going to happen.
I think if you look at the numbers, they've leveled off, definitely. I think there's room to grow. I think with a fighters union, then they perhaps can have one league. So instead of Bellator, WSOF, UFC. So I think there's room to grow, and I think there's room to pay your fighters more. So it's to your point, right? Floyd Mayweather is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant businessman who built this empire that made a ridiculous amount of money, which is great. I'm very happy for him. But I also think that these guys getting paid, you know, $11,000 once a year is deplorable. And I think there's room to pay all of your fighters more. So one piece of the NFL, the fighters union makes the NFL pay them a certain percentage of the revenue. We have no idea what the UFC's revenue is. They're a private company. They don't publish that. The fighters don't know. So they could be getting paid way more than they should, or more likely they're getting paid way less than they should.
Well, I mean, I think if you look at this deal, one would assume. I mean, you've heard a lot of stories. To be fair, you hear a lot of stories of Dana coming in after fights and quote-unquote taking care of fighters, whatever that means, right?
That's so subjective, though,
it's
right?
Totally subjective. I totally agree with you. Whatever that means. That said, I just think when you look, and the timing couldn't have been better for us and worse for them, right? You have an event on Saturday night that actually broke Comcast, Charter, Dish, and DirecTV. It broke.
They had to stall the event so more people could
shell out $100. For 45 minutes, they had to do that as those four companies scrambled to figure out how they were going to fix their model that couldn't scale. Okay?
Right.
So when I tell you that it's never going to happen in mixed martial arts, it's never going to happen. Because, you know, the perception of the sport is it's too violent. And as much as it's grown in leaps and bounds on being Fox, on Fox, I should say, and it's gotten some kiss from being near the NFL, never the two shall mix, so to speak, right? They have promos in the middle, but it's not like they're not embracing it in the same way that they embrace, let's say, I don't know, the World Series, right? Or the Stanley Cup playoffs or things like that. That's not to say that there aren't people watching, because there are plenty of UFC fights that get better ratings than NHL hockey. And that's nothing against NHL hockey, and certainly not the case, I would say, for the UFC to have a $500 million event. Because, you know, we're dealing with mass mediums, that being TV, and people watching sporting events, which is something a lot of people are trying to figure out how to steal. I mean, you even saw it on Saturday night with Pacquiao and Mayweather, with people using Meerkat and Periscope. But this deal just shines a light on the actual problem here, right? Is that you're an independent contractor to the UFC, and they're treating you, some fighters on this roster, and I picked on the women. I don't mean pick in a negative sense, but I picked on the women because that, for me, is the most exciting part of the organization right now. That's the growth potential, because we learned 2 weeks ago the growth potential does not happen on the back of Demetrius Johnson, right? So it's not lighter weight males. It's can you replicate Ronda Rousey in Johanna Jędrzejczyk? And if you can, isn't that really exciting for the sport? That said, Johanna Jędrzejczyk or Ronda Rousey, maybe Ronda Rousey is unequivocally the biggest star in the UFC right now. And as much as I love her and what she's doing and all the stuff that she has going on, nobody, and I mean nobody, is going to garner enough interest to put together a $500 million pay-per-view of her even fighting Cyborg.
Right. And, you know, we know GSP, John Jones, a few other people were making north of $5 million a fight. That is still 1/40th of what Floyd Mayweather is going to do.
Right.
I think UFC 200 will be a big event. I think they'll go all out for that. I think we might see 1.5 million pay-per-view buys, which is still half of what this fight was, the Mayweather fight, that is.
And still 140% lower than what the whole thing will bring in, right?
Like, right, yeah, and it's still $60 a buy versus $100
a
buy.
If you want to go there real quickly before we go to the next segment, and we talk to the guys from MMA Dude Bro, you're never going to see that again either, right? The public is not going to fall for that a second time. And after this sequel is done between Manny and Floyd, like you said earlier, there isn't anybody else in the gate waiting to pull that sort of number.
No.
And, while you're emailing me your thoughts, your hot take, if you will, on how Conor McGregor is going to bring in $1 billion pay-per-view, I'm going to tell you you're clinically insane. He hasn't even won anything yet. He's just tricking you into thinking that he's won something. He hasn't won anything yet. So
he's got a huge mansion.
I saw that thing.
He's ginormous mansion.
Training in Vegas in that 7-bedroom crazy mansion thing. Now, look, if he wins that fight, that's awesome for the UFC. It's another bankable star in a year that's cursed by Jon Jones. But as much as I love his antics and love his fighting style and I'm super excited for July 11th to see what happens there, it's still not the thing that's going to draw a $500 million into a single event.
Agreed. You know, I think there's room to grow. I think eventually they might get that big. I'm not ready to say never. And I still think that the fighters need to be compensated more.
I agree with the last point. The first point, I'm telling you, it's never, and it's on tape. So you can listen to it again and again.
Never
and
ever.
Again and never ever.
Dude,
ever.
Bro.
They are on next. We will talk to MMA. We will talk to MMA Dude Bro. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search WOW Show. We'll talk next week, Joe. Have a great day. It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Holmgren, along with Ken from MMA Dude Bro. One of the things I love about MMA is the fact that, at least on the journalist side, there's a lot of camaraderie, and you can jump on Twitter and have some great conversations, and the guys from MMA Dude Bro do some really awesome podcasting, and have been very fun to talk about, or talk with, I should say, on Twitter, so I thought I would reach out to those guys and see if they wanted to join the show for a night or two, and so Ken was kind enough to spend a couple minutes. So, Ken, first, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I really feel like I'm on like a real podcast. You're very professional and articulate. And good Lord.
It's mostly because I'm not drunk yet. So, but we'll get there.
Thanks for thinking of me nonetheless.
Well, so, you know, I've been listening for a minute to your podcast. For people to get some kind of background, we actually met because both of the podcasts are on the iHeartRadio network, and that's kind of, if you search MMA, both of the podcasts came up, and I started to search all the guys that were in that universe and start talking to them, and that's when I started listening. And why I wanted to have you on this week in particular is because last week I thought your conversation about John Jones was really interesting, and mostly I wanted to get your take because you were so dead set on not thinking that they would strip him from the title, which they actually ended up doing. And I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, did you think that at the end of it, because in your podcast, which I think was episode 78, right, if you're going back and want to listen to it on iTunes or Stitcher, you were kind of done with him, right? You called him a scumbag, which I'm not saying any of that stuff is wrong, but I just wondered your take on what the organization did. Was it enough? Does it send a message? Is it just a message to John Jones? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a good message at the very least, to the other 585 independent contractors that you have working for you, that, you know, there are rules and they apply to everybody. To some degree, it was really, I think their hands were tied. I don't think it was something that Dana and Lorenzo were hopping and skipping and carrying on about, like, very happily having to do. But they did it nonetheless. I mean, Dana, I don't know how much of this PR, people think that we bash Dana on our podcast. We really don't. I mean, I love Dana. I'd party with Dana tomorrow. I mean, he just seems like a cool guy on a lot of levels. But, I mean, not a guy that I would want to cross. But he came out and said this was his last chance, I guess, that, like, the cocaine thing, by all, you know, accounts, probably should have been the last. It's kind of like you would send me Sam in the cartoon. He's like, I dare step over this line. No, this line. No, this line. So this was apparently the last chance per the Argana to case or not. I think their hands were tied. I think they did it. Plus, you got, like, in a normal person's life, say you get in an accident that happens. I mean, It's people don't take into account how something like this, what on the surface it might seem minuscule, but the legal ramifications and all the red tape takes up a good portion of your life. And I can't see a guy really preparing for a fight and have that kind of hemisphere of his life while this other stuff is going on. They really, in all facts, kind of did him a favor. And this whole thing with that guy, that agent of his, Malki Kawa, saying that, you know, he may never return, and this is an injustice. Like, Lord, give me a break.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, and I guess this isn't actually fair, but to, I guess, show the other side of it, he, after pushed a little bit from Ariel, he backed off a little bit. Like he said, I think, I understand what they were doing, but I still don't think it's right. I'm with you. I don't believe for a second that he's not coming back. Because I just think, like you guys were talking about, Thiago Silva, right? They kicked him out. They brought him back. Then there was a video of cocaine and guns, and then they totally kicked him out. But they had made two stumbles up until that point. And so if you're going to let that guy back in, this really isn't nearly as bad as that, right? And neither one of them are okay, but that's not even on the same level.
Well, I mean, about 3 weeks from now, we could potentially have a new light heavyweight champion who is a legend. Serial domestic abuser,
right? You know, and
just you can't win for losing.
Well, and to your credit, right, you nailed that fight right on the head. Exactly what was going to happen, who was going to be involved. We're not really sold on the fact that that guy's going to be the real champion. Do you guys have the same feeling?
Mike doesn't. Mike thinks it's a paper champion fight. I very humbly disagree. I mean, I think that's the real champion. I mean, to me, And we'll get into this a little bit when our new episode drops, probably in a day or two, is that my feeling is that, per his actions, that John Jones voluntarily relinquished the belt. Involuntary, however you want to put it, his actions perpetuated a resignation of sorts. So, I mean, to me, that's the real belt. It was the real belt when, you know, Lawler fought Johnny Hendricks. I don't see it as much different. And I do think that, not to insult the public, because there's other things I do want to say about the MMA fans, if we can get into it maybe a little bit.
Sure.
If I can steer it kind of. But, I mean, and that's related to another subject matter altogether. But I think that the MMA fans are both smarter than what people give them credit for, and they're a lot more fickle than what people give them credit for. I think that whoever comes out of this fight and wins the title, makes a title defense, John Jones recedes in the background more and more, people will forget. Or they'll at least forget the idea. I mean, they'll totally forget, but they will grow accustomed to the idea that this guy is the champion. You know, and it's not like with Fabricio Verdum. I mean, everybody knows that the return of the true champion is imminent. You know what I mean? Unless he slips on a banana peel.
Yes, there is that looming banana peel everywhere that Cain Velasquez goes, which is a shame. They should come up with some sort of security measures on that. The other news that broke today that I'm interested to get your take on, your thought, I mean, you guys have been tweeting just as I have the stuff from Front Row Brian and Jonathan Snowden and all of those guys. Your thoughts on the Reebok deal?
I think it looks worse than what it is. I mean, the one thing that I think, and it sounds like something you read in the fine print, but I think the positive out of this, or at least something that maybe somewhat of a buried silver lining, is that this appears as though it's like a first draft. You know, they did say in their conference call that they do want to review this, you know, constantly as the relationship and as things keep moving. You know, to hear them say from a business standpoint, Fertitta said something to the effect that they're going to have to deficit finance into the millions for the first 2 or 3 years. Meaning, I guess, that they're going to lose money on their end, you know, because there's all sorts of administrative costs and stuff like that. I mean, that's fine because they're in it for the long term, allegedly, and, you know, it's going to take a few years for them, just like when they bought the company, for them to make a profit. And that's all fine and good, but you can't really tell that to somebody who, you know, is losing 70, 80% of their income. That's just hard to take. My interest is how this is going to, and it may not be apparent right away, but I'm interested in the long term how this is going to act as a catalyst maybe for Bellator, as far as maybe this will be one of the things that will truly help towards evening the playing field a little bit. Because in Bellator, you can have as many logos on your ass as you want. I mean, you can have, dude wipes everywhere.
Right,
it's
right.
No big deal.
Right.
And I think that may appeal to a lot of these guys. It may help sway as, as minuscule as it sounds, it may be the thing to help sway more talent into a negotiation type state, to where they wouldn't think to go to Bellator, but you know.
Would you I know you have some background in this, which is why I ask you this question. If that were the thing to happen, would you see any scenario where this might mirror the pro wrestling Monday Night Wars? Do you think it would ever come to that sort of competitive nature, or not, this isn't a big enough thing to do that?
It may be a catalyst. It may be this as the initial drop in the bucket, but once the bucket gets filled with drops, it's a lot of water. I think WCW, it may get overused by probably every podcast under the moon. It's true. I mean, this is really the Bellator thing. You know, WCW was backed by Time Warner, this big conglomerate, and Bellator has the backing of Viacom, which is the biggest company in the world, theoretically, you know, as far as entertainment is concerned. So, yeah, I mean, I think the analogy more than fits. And now they've got a guy that kind of understands the line as blurry as it is between entertainment and sport, and Scott Coker, and, you know, they're putting on fights itself. I'm going to watch Kimbo and Ken Shamrock. It may be a total farce athletically, but, you know, I think we all need that closure from Elite XC. You know what I mean? you may not think that you want it, but there's part of you that's like, you know, come on.
Well, and you know, they're clearly getting people to watch, right? People watch the Tito Bonner fight, even though that was a complete farce. And you're right. People are going to watch this fight, even people who don't know what you're talking about, who don't know that Ken Shamrock slipped on the same banana peel that Cain Velasquez slips on right before this Kimbo fight, mm-hmm. you know, and that brought Seth Petruzzelli out, who beat Kimbo and started this whole kind of chain of events. Even if you don't know that story, I think people see those two fighters and they're like, yeah, I'm totally going to check that out. On Spike, totally. I'm all in.
Did you know that Frank wanted to fight? And he the thing was, he went on a bender with the production crew, thinking that this was going to be a slam dunk and he was going to have like a commentary job into perpetuity, and this was, you know, going to be like the big thing. And yeah, he partied with the crew. And then once Ken, I guess in the hotel room, he suffered that injury wrestling with his counterpart there. Frank wanted to fight, but the state of Florida told him, like, you know, pound salt. And it's just, the whole thing is a very interesting story. And like I said, we deserve some closure.
And we're going to get, it's June 20th, right? That's when that one, we get closure on that one?
I think so. You know, the undercard doesn't look that bad either. I hear rumblings every couple days that they're adding more fights to it. So, yeah. And, you know, they've really, I've always been an advocate for Bellator. I think it's always been a lot of fun. I mean, there was kind of a hole in my viewing agenda that was left behind by WEC, because WEC was a favorite of mine because the production was always solid and you were going to get, at the very least, if not top shelf matches, you're at the very least going to get an entertaining fight card. And I think Bellator, for the most part, even when like I started watching them back when they were on MTV2, and they kind of filled that void for me to a large degree. And ever since Coker's come in, they've, you know, amped up the kind of big ramp down and lasers.
Right.
And,
yeah.
So I think it's going to be great. I mean, this, like I said, this thing with the Reebok deal and the fact that you have those opportunities afforded to you. In places like Bellator and WSLF, which is supposedly the band you listen to, like kind of like a shadow company, you're saying. But like Bellator, at least you can still have your banners, still have your stuff, and that might be, appeal to a lot of people. Like, yeah, these guys got to eat. You know what I mean?
Well, and you know, we were just talking a minute ago. If you do the math, right? Let's say they just keep this deal the way it is, and you've got two fights in the UFC, you get $6,000 to show, you make the $2,500 for the Reebok endorsement, you've got to take care of your camp, you got to take care of your management, you got to take care of all of this other stuff, and let's say you get injured in that fight and you're out for a year,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, what do you do then? Teach private jiu-jitsu lessons? I mean, what are you doing to make ends meet at that point?
Again, that may be a reason why a lot of these guys may search out Bellator as an option, because that's money that's a lifestyle change. It really is. It's a game changer. And just the fact that 21 fights, that's a lot.
Well, because Jorgensen is clearly one of them, but I was trying to think of, like, that list is what, maybe 20 fighters out of the 500, maybe 30?
Jason Tebow is jumping up and down for joy. He's loving life.
Right. Yeah, but like we were talking in the first segment, that if you go through the strawweight and bantamweight female fighters, like every single one of them is just about in the $2,500 tier, because they haven't had that many fights in this system, right? So you've almost got two whole weight classes that go back down. You want to talk about a change of lifestyle, that go back down to a different change of lifestyle.
Definitely. And those girls, I mean, a lot of them, we interviewed, because like between the show and these last few months, a lot of those 115 girls had to wait what seemed like forever to get the phone call from Sean Shelby. And, you got to eat. And the thing is, for those ladies, for that weight class in particular, they don't have the option to go to another big league, someone on the same level of exposure, because they also have a 115 division. I mean, Bellator did that a couple years ago. But then Bjorn dropped it. But yeah, it's rough, and it's going to continue to be rough. But I think it's interesting, because like when push comes to shove, and just like in regular society, if people got to eat and they got to figure out some on that, it'll be interesting to see how this pans out as it relates to. This may be the answer that ancillary leagues need.
Right.
They'll be able to develop younger talent. They'll be able to develop younger talent that won't be getting paid otherwise.
It's the Rage Against the Machine quote, right? Hungry people don't stay hungry for long, yo. Also, this weekend, UFC Fight Night is happening. We're heading back to Australia. You got Stipe Miocic and Mark Hunt. Your thoughts on this fight? I mean, Mark's always a game fighter. This seems like a really interesting scrap to me, although, you know, it's 11 p.m. in the afternoon for us. Or, sorry, 11 p.m. at night for us. So it's, you know, these weird times where you've kind of got to – we call it on this show that some of these fights aren't for us. You know, they're this universal world market.
Yeah.
And you can see by the card that there isn't much else to talk about. If you're the Buffalo Wild Wings fan, right, the guy that goes out and was hanging out with you and the one other waitress at the Demetrius Johnson fight, you know, if you're going out to see that, the main fight is about the only thing you're going to know what's happening in.
Well, if you're somewhat of a moderate to hardcore fan, I think that this is actually a pretty great card. I mean, Robert Whittaker, he is a beast. I forget the last guy he fought. I want to say he fought Dylan Andrews the last time I saw him, and it was just that guy just keeps coming. He's almost like the Australian version of Chris Weeben, and just that he won't stop. Anthony Perosh, he's somebody that can surprise people. Jake Matthews, he's one of these wonderkins that, you know, just he's kind of being billed as the next big thing. He could be a big fighter for that market. And, you know, the undercard is kind of weird with, I think it's going to surprise people. Alex Chambers versus...
I don't disagree with you, right? You got Beck Rawlings on there, obviously, with the tie-in there. What I'm saying, though, is as you're trying to grow this brand... explaining this card to somebody who watches for John Jones only, you're going to have a really difficult mm-hmm. time selling this card to them.
Oh, of course. I mean, there's so many events that, I mean, this is one of those cards where, you know, this may be a skip card because there's a lot of people that may not even have Fight Pass, or if they have it, they may not understand the availability of it, the fact that, you know, you can watch it, you know, whenever you want once the thing's done, because, I mean, it's replay on demand. But, I mean, I think part of this thing, I think they knew when they expanded this thing to, like, 50 fights a year or 50 events a year, they knew that people were going to pick and choose. And to your point, this is an ambassador card. This is a card to where, you know, they got service needs of those want to expand into. And I don't know. My co-host Mike seems to think that this is net. I think that at some point this is going to level off once certain territories are established. But I don't know. I mean, 50 some odd events a lot to keep track of. And but I mean, as far as if you're to ask me, knowing what I know about MMA, as far as like my level of fandom, I think this is worth watching. I think it's a good card. I think it's better than that Poland card.
I was just going to say that, you know, if you look at the Poland card, right, if you look at this card, like you said, there are fighters on here, maybe you haven't heard of them, but they've got some clout here in the UFC, and you should pay attention to them, because at some point you're going to see them on a what we might call a non-ambassador event. But that Poland card was Crow Cop, and then like any other Saturday night MMA fight you might see in wherever, you know, in Albany, New York, you know what I mean? Like just a whole bunch of local fighters show up and fight, and then Crow Cop shows up.
Pretty much. I mean, that was a great fight, though. I mean,
totally.
Anybody that missed that, that you try to catch it. I mean, the, I forgot that the walkouts were going to be so awesome, like the music and everything. I was like, as soon as I heard Danzig and Duran Duran, I'm like, wow, I get it now. This has got a big fight feel. And on the merit of the fight itself, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, but, you know, like we're saying, I mean, it comes at a cost, spreading yourself thin like that. But I think that with this card in particular, the Australian one, there's a good crossover of people from that area of the world people should keep an eye on.
What do you think, Ken Rodriguez joining us from MMA Dude Bro, what do you think your thoughts on, I know your thoughts on Demetrius Johnson because I listened to the podcast, but I want to get your thoughts not only on what Demetrius could do or how long he needs to wait for that foil, as you referred to it, and should the UFC be concerned that an area or a region of the world where they used to be able to sell out pay-per-views no problem regardless of what was on there, that being Canada, isn't necessarily the case anymore?
Well, the Canada thing was all about the break with GSP. As much as they like to paint a rosy picture, there was a lot of hard feelings about that. I mean, when Dana did that tirade after George St. Pierre made that kind of half-comatose speech, he probably maybe shouldn't have... Well, there was one time where he maybe should have held his tongue, because people still remember that. You know, it's kind of like when you get yelled at by your dad, and things are okay, you're going to fish trips with dad, but you kind of keep that stuff in the back of your mind, like... he did some damage there. And that's, I think, a big part of what happened with Canada. As far as Demetrius Johnson, I think it's the same thing with like Anderson. I agree with Daniel that it's the same thing like Anderson Silva and Chuck Liddell and people like that. I think as long as he keeps winning, he'll eventually, you know, the bull come. Either the perfect foil will come, and I thought he's going to be it. Then, you know, he got beat by a guy who missed weight, so that's not going to happen. That was kind of disappointing. But I think as far as an athletic endeavor, him and Dodson, I mean, it may be somewhat adversarial, but then again, I think a lot of that will come from Dodson. But I think even though it may not be the most adversarial kind of like trash talking kind of an event, I think the athleticism of those two guys, that's undeniable. I mean, to me, that should sell fights. But then again, there's a difference between people like myself and casual fans, you know? I mean, it's very hot and cold.
Yeah, and I mean, to make that example a little bit bigger, if you look at Jose Aldo, right? Same sort of issue until Conor McGregor comes along, and then it's going to be the biggest pay-per-view of the year, seemingly. I mean, that's the buzz you've got behind it.
Yeah, and it's to some degree, I mean, it's a little unfortunate that, I'm not a fan of him grabbing the belt and, you know, some of the things he's done. But then again, I'm going to watch it because of that. So, I mean, and as much as it may be a little bit over the top, I think McGregor, it justifies the means. And this is more exposure than what Aldo's ever got. So I'm, in a way, I'm willing to kind of let all that nonsense with McGregor kind of put that off to the side in substitution for being happy for Aldo. Because he's one of the most talented guys. And
sure,
he deserves to have that spotlight. He deserves, he was more than overdue for the kind of payday he's going to get on this.
What do you think is going to happen in that fight? Like, do you think McGregor's just going to hit a brick wall, or what's your thoughts?
I go back and forth. I do think that it will be a finish and it will be dominant, but it could be on either side. And it sounds kind of wishy-washy, but there's a lot of people that are very adamant that, you know, the reality will kind of come to the forefront because, I mean, Aldo is a different animal than anything he's ever faced. I mean, there's a lot of rhetoric during that tour where, you know, McGregor offered the idea that, you know, he has four finishes and Aldo doesn't finish people. People survive, but, you know. And there were valid points kind of buried underneath all the criticisms and him trying to, like, basically just throw barbs and whatever. But Aldo was a different beast, and I think he's still as dominant as he ever was. But people forget. If you're a champion, you got to fight. You fight in a different way. And you fight, I mean, the other guy's got to beat you. I mean, I'm not saying Aldo is evasive as, say, like a Mayweather or something as, you know, potentially openly disgraceful as that. But I mean, like, you know, he fights the way a champion fights. And if he sees a top turn for a finish, then he goes for it. Like, you know, the first Chad Mendes fight, you know, he started out for a finish and he took it. And just like with Demetrius, I mean, he went for the arm bar, albeit like in the last few seconds, because he didn't want to listen to his coach bitch at him like Monday at the gym. So, I mean, these guys, be it GSP or be it Mouse or Aldo, they finish fights, but they don't go in there reckless looking to finish fights. That's for the guys on the undercard to do.
Because they got to get the $2,500, man.
Oh, you know, I mean, credit cards and the Discover bills don't pay for themselves. But, I mean, I think it will be decisive. I think McGregor is very unorthodox, and he's got this really weird kind of like a Queensberry kind of stance. Like, he does. He looks like the freaking Notre Dame mascot. He's got the angles and stuff, and I don't know. I'm very hesitant to go one way or the other, but I wouldn't be surprised if McGregor won, and I wouldn't be surprised if Aldo won. And it sounds so pathetic and wishy-washy, but I'm still on the fence.
Yeah, but at least you're 100% right, which is the awesome part. Ken Rodriguez of MMA Dude Bro is joining us. You can get the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, or head to MMADudeBro.com. Follow him on Twitter at MMA Pod. Dude, thank you so much for spending some time. This has been awesome. Would love to have you back on at some point if that's cool.
Absolutely. Can I mention one more thing? Right,
yeah, now? Dude, absolutely.
Okay. This whole thing with Mayweather, that's the other part I want to talk about, is where I think maybe MMA fans and combat sports fans aren't really necessarily given their just due. The thing that disappointed me about that fight wasn't so much that it ended up being kind of a clunker. It's just that I really resent the idea of the combat sports media telling me how I'm supposed to feel about it, or how I'm supposed to, like, I guess, have my feelings justified by them. There's a lot of people who remain nameless who are in the media and the combat sports media who were showing this thing, and they were showing it as the quote-unquote fight of the century. And they even appeared on the pregame, some of these people, too, by name. They had their names up in it, you see their face, and, you know, and then they drew an about-face afterwards, like, well, nobody ever said it was going to be a great fight. And it's like, you know, to tell people, especially when most of the audience that are paying for this thing and are making up the buy rate, $4 million, whatever this is, those are casual fans. And those are fans that may not even follow boxing except for the fact that their dad and their granddad told them as they were growing up about these generational events. They told them about Ali Frazier. They told them about Hagler Hearns. They told them about Sugar Ray Leonard and Noel Moss with, what's his name there? I mean, they told them about not just those fights, Durant. They told them about all those fights. And not just, since, I mean, you know, I know when I grew up, I shared a lot of those moments with my father, but it's like, you get, it's not just the cultural event, that nature of it, but it's just that you remember where you were, you remember your life and how beautiful things were, in essence, because of that moment. And I think a lot of people, and including myself, I mean, I probably should have known better because I've seen enough of Mayweather to know how he fights, but I think I was romanticized by the same thing that a lot of people were romanticized about. They wanted to have something that they could tell their kids and grandkids about. And who doesn't, as an American, because we deserve everything, we should feel entitled to have each generation our own kind of story, our own seismic event that we can look back on with some semblance of joy and be able to remind of it as we're talking about it. And this didn't provide that. And I kind of thought in a very naive way that both of these guys, I mean, I didn't know Pacquiao was injured, but even beyond that, I kind of thought that both these guys, you know, we all knew it was a money grab, but I kind of thought that both those guys would use this as an opportunity to pay out whole history and kind of rise beyond themselves and not just be about making, you know, cashing the check, you know, maybe putting forth the athletic effort that maybe they're capable of at the, you know, stage of their life. But, you know, there was the fix was in. And like I said, I mean, that is what it is, and I think the onus should be somewhat on the knowledgeable public. But I think to tell the audience as a whole in a very elitist way that you should have known what this was, you know what I mean? Like, you should have known what kind of fighter it was. That's unfair. So that's my two cents.
I don't disagree. I guess the other question is, are you going to get the sequel? Did you say yeah?
What was that?
I said, are you going to buy are you going to buy the sequel when they fight again next year?
Oh no, of course not. No, hey, if I knew that this thing was going to be on Facebook on Sunday, I wouldn't. I mean, I didn't buy it. I went and I paid a cover at a place to go see it, and you know, I wouldn't have done it. If I knew it was going to be on Facebook, I wouldn't have done that. But I mean, like I said, but then again, there's part of you that wants to feel communal. And, you know, they really did. They kind of touched on like a very kind of a like soft, kind of cushy human element. To be part of the people and sharing a moment and kind of be like a real live beer commercial. And, you know what I mean? Like, there's part of you that wants that. And I think for the first half of the fight, I think part of me was trying to kind of hang on to that. But then you knew him just matching the guy shot for shot wasn't enough. He was just way in the hole by the sixth, seventh round. I mean, there's no way he was going to fight his way back in the scorecards like that.
The boxing fan in me, right, and to be 100% transparent, I'm a casual boxing fan at best. But, you know, the boxing fan in me, though, can at least appreciate the magicianship of Floyd Mayweather, right? It's not the most exciting thing in the world, but it's likely the most technical.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, that falls under the bracket of, you know, this is an event where it has such, you know, partly because of the nature that it's the two best guys in the world finally meeting, albeit 5 years too late. But as much as I hate to say it, it may sound naive on the surface, there was a responsibility kind of incumbent on these guys to kind of perform and give the people what this thing was truly meant and measured up to be. And they weren't on that tip at all. I mean, I can't really say that. I mean, I think Pacquiao, had he not been injured, this rotator cuff thing, I think we maybe would have seen a bit more. He had that one flurry in the fourth round where he kind of showed shades of results. Had that continued for a little while, maybe it would have forced Mayweather to fight. I mean, we don't know. I'm not paying $100 for the sequel to find that out.
Ken Rodriguez joining us from MMA Dude Bro online at MMADudeBro.com. The podcast available iTunes, Stitcher, and the iHeartRadio app. And then you can follow them on Twitter at MMA Pod. And then obviously UFC Fight Night 65 from Australia. You can follow both of us to find out what is happening there if you want to figure out who is winning and what you should watch and why you should check out Fight Pass, because you certainly should. Ken, have an awesome week. Look forward to talking to you again, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Eric. Your game is tight. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, dude.